Tim, you're I can see you itching to talk about scripting languages over there.
No, I don't want to talk about
that. No, no.
I'll talk about that later. But, okay. You know, since everybody's been, you know, exuding sunny optimism about EE5 and so on, I think a little bit of devil's advocacy might come in useful. And, you know, you could, for an outside observer, it would be easy to explain all the things we're seeing going on around EE5 as a response to the fact that Java has been getting its butt kicked by PHP in very substantial, interesting, and growing sectors of the market. And by the way, as of Q2 2006, is still getting its butt kicked by PHP in interesting, growing sectors of the market. Go talk to Tim O'Reilly and see his, you know, data about book sales and things like that. And you know, Ruby Rails is getting all the glamour and so on. I see Rails more as a bullet aimed at the heart of PHP than at the heart of Java, actually. And personally, I hate PHP. It's awful stuff. And it would really make me very happy if what EE is trying to do were successful in reclaiming part of that web tier, low rent, quick entry marketplace back. But it's not a sure thing, you know. I mean, PHP is bad, but it's also good. I mean, you know, PHP taught us some lessons about, you know, shared nothing and low barrier to entry and so on. The Java still has a way to go to learn.
Doesn't PHP run on the JVM now, though? So can't we
bring
that into
and the fold? And here's the news, is it runs on the JVM faster than native PHP does.
Right.
So what does that mean? I don't know, but it's an interesting story.
It means that the PHP VM isn't very good, but it's good enough. Well, it's an interesting lesson for Java in itself.
And to go back to my comments about Ruby on Rails is not so much that, you know, Java is competing with it, but it raises the visibility of JEE5 when, you know, people who may not have been keeping track of it and have sort of, you know, put off as EJB is never going to be usable, or this is never going to be usable, or that's never going to be usable. I think that you know, Ruby and its attack on PHP, which I think that's pretty accurate too. I mean, that's mostly the people who are migrating to it. What comes out of that though is that, you know, the awareness that there is much simpler models, and then, you know, people then turn around and like, oh, what is Java going to do for me? And they're like, oh, look, they've been working on it for years. Here it is. But, you know, I don't think that everybody follows as closely as the people at this table do, and so it can look like, wow, you know, they do have ease of use over there in the Java camp.
What I was going to add to this discussion is that, you know, from what I've seen is that the definition of the Java community has changed. In that it's no longer, you know, the JCP and the Java community are no longer synonymous with each other. So Java has become more of a kind of an implementation detail of something you want to do. And you know, and I know I'm maybe pointing out what many of you already know anyway, but I think we live in a very heterogeneous world, and we're going to continue to live in that kind of a world. So with, you know, you can have Ruby on Rails and PHP and Java and all that working together, and that's in the circles that I run, which is, you know, which are the same circles that many of you do, which is, you know, enterprises trying to just make stuff work, right? You've got to deal with all these different platforms and technologies, and I don't think we're ever going to get back to a time where, you know, I remember, you know, 5-6 years ago, you know, coming to this, the Java 1 was like going to the Mecca, right, to find out what's the new technology that's going to save everything, right? And it's just not like that anymore. You know, it's kind of okay, there's really important stuff happening there, but it's part of the implementations of a lot of things that we do.
Rob. Yeah, I'd agree that, you know, absolute homogeneity should neither be a goal or should be expected. On the other hand, so I, you know, 2 years ago I was heavily involved with the Java community on sort of the production side, and I'm now in an environment where I'm a complete consumer, right? I'm only academically interested in how it evolves and so forth. I want it to have a certain collection of properties for me as a designer, but in our business, we're mostly serving people who are constructing SOA environments and so forth, and the idea that there'd be a resurgence in a tool like Java that would help people accelerate that would be really welcome to us, because we basically see that the SOA world, while holding a lot of promise, proceeds very slowly. And I think it's fair to say that one factor in why it proceeds slowly is this sort of, you know, large collection of things you got to learn to do it with. So I don't think seeking one ought to be an answer, but seeking fewer might help it in terms of, you know, how much an organization has to learn in order to do something, because a lot of smaller organizations can't afford to invest in people that know every one of these interesting technologies. And so something that gets a little more traction would be welcome, but I think seeking unity is a, you know, worthless thing to hunt.
But I would add that slow adoption of SOA is not about technology. That's a whole other discussion to have.
That's a whole other discussion we're going to have in a minute.
I agree. There's a lot more to it than just the technology part, but technology is a factor.
Yeah. Ari.
I was just going to add an interesting anecdote to all of this, the topic of PHP and homogeneity, et cetera. I was called in maybe a year and a half ago to look at one of these large internet sites, you know, viral community type site, and it was a famous, very slow performing, grew too fast for itself kind of site. And I was called in by its investors. They said, it's running Tomcat and Java, you seem to know it. I got in there, their VP of engineering said, I don't know why you're here, we just switched to PHP 2 weeks ago and everything runs perfectly. And I said, so what was the problem before? Just out of my own morbid curiosity. He said, well, we couldn't keep the garbage collectors on the VMs, couldn't keep track of session being added for every user fast enough, and we'd keep throwing out of memory and the VM would crash. And we switched to PHP and the problem went away. And I said, well, you know, PHP is stateless, share nothing, put all the burden on the browser, right? And they said, and so you could have just configured Tomcat to be sessionless and be done with it in a couple of hours. And they said, oh, we didn't realize that. So, you know, homogeneity is not good, but, you know.
But idiocy is worse.
Well, I mean, a disgusting amount of, you know, heterogeneity is arguably far worse. When people have too many choices and the purveyors of core technology, platform technology that everyone bases their business solutions on aren't forced to solve the core problems that all businesses have, that deliver SLAs and be able to adhere to them, et cetera. At the end of the day, you know, it behooves us, people sitting in this room, to help, you know, come to more standards. And I think it's much greater than JEE5 or JPA. It's about really solving business problems.
Larry, we're going to move on then.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up with David Rob's discussion about heterogeneity and the Java platform. I absolutely believe that, I agree with Dave, that the Java platform is bigger than the JCP. The Java community is much bigger than the JCP. Now, I would argue that, you know, the language and environment that people innovate on today and create new technologies, whether they're open or proprietary, is Java. Heterogeneity is something we have to deal with. But there's a cost associated with that. I don't visit, you know, I visit enterprise customers a lot, and every one of them in management complains about the fact that they have all of these developers downloading all of these open source technologies, rolling them up in their projects, and shipping them out into production. And they don't know what's out there, they don't know what's running, and they don't know what or when Darwinism is going to kick in. Mm-hmm. And I'm not personally seeing a lot of Darwinism in open source yet, and I'm wondering when it's going to kick in and when people are going to find that they're sitting in the enterprise with an unknown set and collection of open source technologies that have suddenly gone the way of the dodo. And so, you know, one of the responses that, you know, BEA has is to go with our blended strategy, which basically says there's these, you know, best of breed open source technologies that we're taking into our platform, because we can then go to our customers and say, well, for this set of technologies that we believe, or the community believes, is a certain bet, mm-hmm. you know, we can support them as a commercial vendor. And you know, that's getting a lot of traction, certainly with the management, who are breathing a massive sigh of relief that they have some way to get a grasp on the sort of unhindered creativity. Right.
But what you just touched on there is a broader issue of SOA governance, or governance in general, and that exists whether you have standardized on a platform or not, right? The notion of developers building services and throwing them out there, Every time someone does that, they're instantly putting their company at risk.
Right.
Because they're out of compliance.
I mean, how many developers read the license when they click accept before right. the download? Mm-hmm. You could, you know, could, somewhere in, you know, clause 105, it could say...
You owe us all your revenue.
Yeah, you owe us 99.9% of all your revenue. Accept.
Well, you know, even if they read it, do they really...
Understand it.
They're not in a position to understand IP law. That's a real problem. Is they can read this whole thing and still, you know, make a bad choice.
And having said that, with respect, the list of technologies that got brought in by the through the back door by developers and deployed against the wishes of IT without asking permission includes the personal computer, the World Wide Web, and Java. Okay.
Right. Yep. Got a spreadsheet.
Yep. Well, and to be honest, the managers might complain about the fact that these components were brought in without the managers knowing and without appropriate due diligence, or blah 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 blah. They complain about the millions of dollars and months of development time they saved them by reusing code as opposed to developing it from scratch. And so I think you're if you go too far down the path you're proposing, you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And there's lots of startups, there's lots of different technologies, there's lots of different ways to deal with the risks. I mean, there's obviously benefits associated with open source. You're right, there's definitely risks. And there's lots of different ways that sound IT managers can put procedures into place. So basically what you're talking about, I think, are sort of the enterprises, which I would say is stage zero of open source adoption, which is denial.
Absolutely.
And there's, you know, in my experience, there's fewer and fewer of those of companies that are in that stage. More and more recognize that it is happening and they have to do something about it. And in most cases, they can do it with clear benefits that exceed the costs.
Well, I think a lot of them are confused between free and open. There's very little free software.
I think in order for an organization to achieve a level of maturity that it needs to be successful, it has to standardize on a certain set of platforms and technologies. Even if the platforms are open source, they have to standardize on something because you have to apply governance to the architects, the engineers that are out there building this stuff in order to know what's going on with your technology.
But I repeat my thing. I mean, in history, IT has always tried to do that, and the developers have always gone behind their back, and that's how we make progress.
Yep. Right, but historically, we haven't had things like Sarbanes-Oxley and executives going to jail because...
But do the developers care if their VP gets thrown
out? No. It's an incentive.
That's why
I'm going to change this from a governance conversation.
Needs to care about that.
Before you do, can I just add a quick thing? So I'm serving the needs of General Motors, Lockheed, and the Army, and those guys. So they're all big enterprises and big organizations, and they don't have any problem with free or open source or any sort of hybrid blend of that, with including COTS products. What they're all trying to do is the diligence that says, at least we investigated it. And what that forces them into is figuring out, well, how am I going to compare these things, and who's going to be the advocate in-house? You know, who is that software developer that I'm going to turn to when it doesn't work? And then also, how does it perform and scale?
So one thing to point, actually, Larry, is that I spent the last weekend down at DevConf down in Mexico, which I have to say is a completely different social experience to Java 1. The thing that you notice about the Debian system is that the way you go about assembling a system for deployment is completely different to the way that we've been used to in the past. What we've been used to doing in the past is evaluations of software, which we then select and procure and then assemble. And in the world of Debian, the way that you work is you assemble and then select and then procure. And what you're procuring is the services and support and know-how to keep what you've assembled in production. And what you're seeing there is a shift in the way that the market works. And I think that what you're describing there with people acquiring free and open source software and then assembling it is actually an indicator of the way that the software development market is going. Mm-hmm. The question is not, how can we stop these people doing this or how can we control them? The question is more, how can we, at the time when we come to deploy the software, how can we control our risk?
Yep.
How can we appropriately identify where to get the support and service from?
Yep.
I think those will be the questions that people will be asking in this world in the very near future. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to take a pause here for a moment. And we've had John Bostrom join us, and I'm going to pretend that John's been here all the time by asking John. John, we all introduced ourselves at the beginning by reciting out what was on our Wikipedia page, and you may—I haven't checked whether you have one.
I do not have
but
one.
But you'll know that a Wikipedia page is written with a neutral point of view.
Right.
It's written. It's edited by your critics. Mm-hmm. So I would. I'm going to ask.
Of which I have many, by the way.
I'm going to ask you what's on your Wikipedia page and who's editing it, and we're going to record that, and it'll be seamlessly inserted into the beginning of the program, just like a wedding photograph with all the guests added later.
Okay.
John, what's in your Wikipedia page?
Well, I'm the director of emerging technologies for Java for Nokia, and I have a long and checkered past in distributed computing, and have worked with people like Rob and a number of people from the beginning of the Java community, and caused a great deal of stir along the way. I was the original technology director for the Genie technology, which was one of those things that caused a lot of stir and was way ahead of its time and may eventually come around again. Who knows?
We're not gotten through yet.
Get the Hello World under 200 lines.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
And who's editing your Wikipedia page with you?
Good question. I spend a lot of time and effort still in the developer trenches. So I can still sling a bit of code here and there, and so I guess the people that would be editing my page would be the people now trying to drive the mobile industry and those developers out there writing for the 1 billion handsets that have Java on them.
Right.
I was as the original architect for mobile Java. I did the Docomo product. And so I helped bring the KVM out of the Sun Lab and actually implemented it at Docomo. And so I would hope that the people editing my page are those, you know, anywhere in the world that have ever written anything for or used a mobile game on a Java device.
Fascinating. I look forward to seeing your Wikipedia page when it's put together. So to take the discussion on, I've heard people talking in the keynotes and elsewhere around Java 1 about how important tools are to the environment. I've heard people criticize web services as a technology that no one can use without the tools written by the guy that invented the spec.
That was 10.
It may well have even been 10. and I wonder, is it a good thing that we're moving into a world where the tools are so tightly coupled to the platform that you can't use the platform without the tools? Are there advantages and disadvantages? We've been talking here as if it's the programming language that matters, but there's...
Sorry about that.
But
yeah, that was a plug.
I wonder whether there's a sense in which the languages are irrelevant. What matters is the IDE that you're using. So I'd be interested in people's views. Is Java easy enough to use on its own? Is it too dependent on tools hiding the ugliness from you? And what's the future?
The problem with the tools hiding the ugliness right now is that they implement all sorts of scalability and performance profiles into the finished application that the developer doesn't know a thing about. 3 years ago, I did a study of SOAP RPC encoding implementations across all the popular tools and showed clearly that SOAP RPC encoding, basically the encoding type 5, you know, of the spec, wasn't scalable. And yet there's still these tool sets out there that'll choose RPC encoded by default, and most of the developers don't know a thing about this. So it's, you know, I've been telling the developers, know your tool set, know it at a protocol level, what the tool's actually doing.
It depends how confident you can be that your abstractions are leaky or not. I mean, you know, TCP/IP isn't leaky. You know, you open a socket and that's all, what's happening underneath doesn't come and get you. Relational databases are hard to abstract away. The abstraction gets leaky. Message passing over the internet is really hard to abstract away. If you believe you can de-leak the abstraction, then you can hide it in the toolkit sometimes. Yeah. And I've gotten to the point where I feel that the term SOA is starting to become actively harmful because there is a mindset there of
of papering over what feel like, you know, really, really leaky abstractions to me that are going to get us all in a lot of trouble.